Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
One year ago today, September 15th, 2008, Lehman Brothers is allowed to go out of business. Greg David, editor of Crain's New York business, comes on the show. Greg, thanks to you for coming on with us on what I'm sure is an insane day for you.
Yes, thank you. It is an insane day here.
And on that insane day, Greg, like most people, fears the worst for New York.
We are definitely going to have a difficult recession in New York. Lehman makes it worse. Depending on what happens with Merrill, it could be even worse.
But Merrill survived, if perhaps under some false pretenses. J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs have become even more powerful. One year later, maybe the finance economy isn't over in New York after all. And guess what? Crain's New York business editor Greg David is back with us for a one-year checkup. Hey, Greg, welcome back to WNYC on a not-as-insane day.
Well, thanks for having me back. At least the clip wasn't completely off base, right?
Right. Well, nobody knew what was going to happen at that time. And listeners, we want you very much in this segment. If you worked in the finance sector on September 15th, 2008, we want to hear from you today. Anyone who worked in finance a year ago today, whether you're still there or not, how scared were you then? And what do you think now about the general state of banking and the New York economy? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What's different in your company today if you're still with the company? What's different in your industry today? 212-433-9692. If you lost your job, do you now think it might come back? 212-433-WNYC. And if you viewed risk in one kind of way a year ago today, how do you view it today? If you viewed right and wrong on Wall Street one way a year ago today, do you view it differently today? Do you feel like the fever has broken on a kind of delusional relationship with mortgage securities or risk? 212-433-9692. And what did you think of President Obama's Wall Street speech yesterday? We'll play some more clips. 212-433-9692. A call in for anyone who worked in the finance sector on September 15th, 2008. Call in for a one-year later check-in. Anything you want to say about what's changed and what's not for you, for the industry, for the city, 212-433-9692. Or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And Greg David, is the finance economy in New York today better, worse, or about what you might have thought it would be on the day that Lehman died?
Well, it's better than I thought it was going to be. You know, if you go through last September, the list is unbelievable. I mean, the government takes over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac early in the month. Then they say they're not going to rescue Lehman. Merrill Lynch breaks off talks to acquire Lehman and rushes into the arms of Bank America because Merrill's CEO thinks they can't survive. Reserve Fund breaks the buck, the first time a money market fund had dipped below a dollar, and they were like the biggest money market fund out there. Billions and billions are thrown into AIG because that insurance company had turned itself into a hedge fund and bet on the housing market. And you know what? I think I left out about half the things that happened.
Yeah, no kidding. How many jobs have actually been lost on Wall Street in the last year? Are good numbers available?
Well, numbers are available, and I think one of the issues is how good they are. You know, the numbers go like this. They show about 100,000 jobs lost in New York City since the peak in August 08. The financial sector, 37, and Wall Street, 28.
You know, now, those are amorphous numbers to most listeners, but you were predicting a lot more lost jobs.
Oh, yeah.
You?
I think everybody had more than 50,000 on Wall Street, and I was predicting as many as 400,000 in the economy. But, you know, I'm not giving up on my prediction yet.
Really? You think things are still going south?
No, I think the numbers lie. The numbers lie because of severance. You know, when you get laid off on Wall Street, you don't get kicked out the door. Even the people at Lehman didn't get kicked out the door. A lot of people lose their jobs with a year's pay. And as long as they're getting severance, their job is counted in the numbers. So, you know, in the last 2 months, we've lost 10,000 jobs on Wall Street. Does that mean that 10,000 people were laid off? I don't think so. I think 10,000 people lost their severance. I mean, I'll just ask you, Brian, you've been around town. Do you think this recession is a lot milder than the one in 2001 or the one in 87?
Well, no. It certainly doesn't feel that way looking around. I feel like I know a lot more people who've lost their jobs than the one right after the World Trade Center attack, or even going back to late 80s, early 90s. You know, that felt pretty bad. But these numbers that you say lie, numbers, you lie.
I agree with you.
100,000 jobs is bad. But in historical context, the recession of the late 80s and early 90s cost several hundred thousand jobs in the city that were documented. So you're saying even the unemployment numbers lie.
I'm just saying, yeah, and the unemployment numbers are going up, and maybe there are more big indicators. I just think the numbers will catch up. We went into this recession a year later than the rest of the country. The numbers on the jobs front often lag. I think this recession is going to be as bad as 87 to 93, which is 325. I think it might even be worse. So nobody should get I think the idea that somehow we've escaped the damage is wrong. And there's one other thing that really worries me. Suburban job losses have been far larger than city job losses. And this is the first time in my experience.
Uh-huh.
In 87 to 93, we all lost the same percentage, one in every nine jobs. In 2001, it was a Manhattan recession, and the boroughs weren't much affected, and neither was the suburbs.
How do you explain it? What are these jobs in the suburbs?
Well, they're not just finance jobs, because finance isn't that big outside of maybe Greenwich. The answer is we have a broad-based economic downturn in New York, in the New York area, which is wringing out the excesses and the problems of the last boom. So you don't get out of these pretty easily. And I think the city numbers will catch up, and it's going to be bad. Now, you know, I should say I'm now in a minority on this, because most of the forecasts are a lot less severe than I am doing. And some people think it'll be much milder than I'm saying. So I'm not the only voice on this subject.
People don't want to predict bad things, right? There's
definitely
a bias against that. Alexandra in Haverstraw, you're on WNYC. Alexandra, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it. I have been unemployed since February 2008. And I was also laid off when 9/11 happened. I used to work for a hotel industry. They let me go because, of course, the hotel industry was going really bad. And I'm comparing my experience back to 2001 to now. And I have to agree with the gentleman. The situation now is horrid now. I haven't been able to even secure a...
Whoops.
At that.
Sorry, we lost you for a second. You haven't even been able to secure what?
A job, an interview.
An interview.
It's been so difficult, maybe one or two, and that's it. Back in 2000.
Still, Alexandra, still in the hotel and tourism industry? Is that where you're looking?
No. I tried it. I started working for Continuum Health Partners, which is they dealt with the finances of the doctors, and we, you know, all the money coming in, and we were let go.
And it's still hard out there. And Greg David, actually, health as a general, and I don't know if that counts as health or as finance, but health is actually still one of the growth industries in New York, isn't it?
It is one of the growth industries in New York. As a matter of fact, healthcare employment in the city, and especially and even in the hospitals, which you wouldn't believe from all those ads they run, has gone up in every year for the last 30 years. Those people who think it won't be as bad as others say, one of the major reasons is that education and health jobs are such a bigger percentage of our economy. But, you know, I think the woman who called in hit on one of the most important psychological parts of this downturn. You know, it's not that you lose your job. It's that you can't really get an interview.
Mm.
It's that you have no prospects. It just seems to be so psychologically debilitating. I mean, I'm sure the people who call in finance, your chances of getting rehired in finance, or actually in the media, which is another hard-hit sector close to my house, just aren't there. It doesn't even make sense, I think, in a way for you to look very hard.
John in the financial district. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. You work at a Wall Street firm?
Yes. I work at the New York Stock Exchange.
Uh-huh.
Well, what I was going to say was, if you read the book, The House of Morgan, it's going to confirm basically what I'm saying, and that's that these large banks, J.P. Morgan, J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Deutsche Bank, they've been around for hundreds of years, and they actually function as central banks. They were the central banks before the Federal Reserve was formed. And government policy, Obama policy, federal policy needs to work with these large banks, not against them. He needs to keep interest rates low. He needs to keep taxes low. Everything he's doing is all wrong, trying to go after these banks and these bankers and raising taxes and raising fees and going after, you know, executives and large companies. It's not helping. It's hurting.
We'll play some clips from the president's Wall Street speech yesterday in a little while and get a little more into this. But the main thing that he seems to want is for banks to have more skin in the game, to make sure that there isn't this kind of leverage investment without anything being on the table, so that they run out of control like the securitized mortgages.
Well,
are you against that?
Banks have skin in the game. They have their capital, and they have banks are the only people in the world that have the ability to raise capital. Governments can't raise capital. All they have to offer in government bonds is a very small return on investment, because governments don't have any potential income. All they have is the ability to levy taxes. Companies have the ability to make profit and give you a good return on your investment, on your bonds.
But that's, and John, thank you for your call. Greg David from Crane's New York Business. You're a solid free marketeer, but that sounds too simplistic for me.
Yeah, and it's probably too simplistic. Look, you know, the fundamental debate that's going on is whether Wall Street has changed or not. You know, the New York Times is clearly on one side of this crusade, because I wake up every other day to read a front page story. Wall Street hasn't changed. 2 months ago it was, oh my God, the pay is back to where it was. Just this weekend it was, oh, a year later, nothing's changed on the regulatory front. The other weekend morning it was, oh, new exotic instruments on Wall Street. And I think that was the purpose of the president's speech. He's arguing that too, that they won't change and that we can't afford to let them go back to the way they were. And we need a new regulatory scheme to make sure they don't do it.
So hold that thought. We're going to take a short break. Then we will hear some clips from the president's speech yesterday. We'll also hear Paul Krugman from said New York Times on the show 1 year ago today and hear one of his predictions for New York City. But we'll get into more of the guts of what the president said he wants. And if John from the Stock Exchange is typical of a lot of reaction on Wall Street and what that would mean for the rest of us. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer with Crane's New York Business Editor Greg David on WNYC.
These rules must be developed in a way that doesn't stifle innovation and enterprise. And I want to say very clearly here today, we want to work with the financial industry to achieve that end. But the old ways that led to this crisis cannot stand.
President Obama from his Wall Street speech yesterday, as we take stock of the fallout 1 year after Lehman Brothers collapsed and the financial panic really set in. Greg David, editorial director of Crane's New York Business, is here, and we're taking calls from anyone who worked in finance on September 15th, 2008. What's different for you today, and what's different for the world? We just heard from John at the New York Stock Exchange, who didn't like the speech. How about you? Maybe you're at work, at Merrill Lynch, since they still exist. 212-433-9692, or maybe you don't work in finance anymore, but you did a year ago today. 212-433-WNYC. Greg, what did you think of President Obama's speech and the new rules of the road that he is proposing?
Well, you know, it's pretty clear that what we've got is Wall Street does not want fundamental new regulation, especially people are really concerned about this agency that would dictate the terms of consumer finance, what kind of mortgages could be offered, et cetera. They think that will stifle innovation. I think in a way, as is often the case, the political debate ignores the reality of the situation. And the two things that are need to be understood is, no matter what you look at, and yes, I know Goldman's making a fortune again, leverage is less on Wall Street. They're not allowed to borrow as much. This may be too technical and for some people, but during the height of the boom, Bear Stearns and Lehman were running leverage ratios, amount borrowed to capital of 36 and 38 to 1. Well, everybody's going to get down to the 20s, which is where the big commercial banks like J.P. Morgan were. Fundamentally, they're going to have to take less risk. Fundamentally, they're going to make less profit. That's just the way it is.
And you think that's going to happen even without regulations? I mean, it's interesting to hear that from you. You're not Paul Krugman. Even Nicole Gelinas today, conservative finance op-ed writer for the Manhattan Institute and the New York Post today, has an op-ed saying the banks still need rules to require that they have a certain amount of their own cash in their leveraged investments. That's the same thing you were just describing. So is there consensus on that?
Yes, but I think it has to happen because they're all commercial banks now, and the Fed just sets the rules. We don't need new rules to do that. The second most important point is not whether Wall Street people are paid a lot of money. It's how they're paid that money. If they're paid in cash, one, that's good for the New York economy, but B, it's bad because it encourages risk-taking because people want to maximize the cash. If they're paid in stock that they can't sell immediately, and I think that's where we're headed, that doesn't encourage risk-taking because, frankly, you have to have the gains for several years. And by the way, by the converse, that's going to be bad for the New York economy because they may be getting a lot of money, but they're not going to be spending it.
Steve in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi.
So where were you a year ago today?
I was at a large investment bank putting in a trading system, and it went in successfully. And what I wanted to point out was the job numbers do not reflect the massive amount of contractors that were working on Wall Street that were let go first. So the day I was laid off, I was laid off with eight people. I was the only one that counted because I was a W-2.
So that's an indication that the unemployment numbers are much worse because there were already a lot of consultants who don't count now as unemployed.
That's correct.
Because they were self-employed. Greg,
that's
does that work
in the unemployment numbers?
Well, we would find those people in the numbers. They're just not going to. If you were employed by a company that worked in tech, it would show up in the tech numbers. And even if you are self-employed, we will catch up with that number exactly. As a matter of fact, there have been enormous losses in business and professional services, lawyers, accountants, consultants, people like that, much larger than the finance losses. But still, you know, I agree with you. You're right. The numbers aren't telling the truth. We will pick up those people in the numbers. We already are, and yet we're still supposedly only at 100.
Now, when we spoke last spring, you didn't think that the government's bailout money would make much of a difference. Still think that?
No, I don't, actually. I was on your TV show, Brian, and we're sitting there talking in, you know, April, and things are looking horrible, of course. And you said to me, well, isn't the bailout money saving thousands and thousands of jobs? And just off the top of my head, I said, no, things are really terrible out there. But you were right, Brian. The bailout money did save these jobs, at least for a while. One of the reasons is pretty clear, you know. If the companies really went out of business right away, they actually couldn't pay as much severance as they're paying. So clearly, the bailout money has helped with this transition. But there is a transition to something different on Wall Street. It's not what we feared last September. I don't think it's what existed in 2007 either. And since I've been around for so long now, I am a little more cautious about trying to figure out that I know exactly what the shape of this new industry is, and I'm not sure I do.
Let me follow up on something you said before in poo-pooing the New York Times. I read that in the Times, I read it, that Wall Street firms are now packaging, I guess it's life insurance policies as securities in much the way they package mortgages. So never mind the notion of not knowing who owns your policy if your husband suddenly dies. Is that any more financially benign than securitized mortgages?
Look, you know, we need to remember that there is actually nothing wrong with securitizing mortgages. You know, I give a lot of speeches, and I'm doing a lot of writing these days based on Liar's Poker, Michael Lewis's extraordinary book about the last Wall Street boom in 1986, which I still say anyone who wants to understand Wall Street needs to read. That book is about the creation of housing securitization, because what we needed to do was move money from the Northeast, where there was lots of money in the banks and very little housing demand, to the Southwest. Securitization as a concept is important for the allocation of capital. It's a question of how it's done.
Right. So one of the ways it was done with respect to mortgages, as I understand it, is that they kept passing the buck in terms of who actually had any risk. I mean, we did have Gretchen Morgenson on the show yesterday from the New York Times, and her new book opens with a story of a friend of hers who was unemployed in 2007, but a bank called him and offered him a huge home equity loan. And he said, no, he can't afford the loan. And they said, no, don't worry, you can afford this, no problem. And the reason that they were trying to force this bad loan down his throat is because the bank actually was not taking any risk, because they would package the loan as a security and ship it out. Right?
Yes. Well, there were all kinds of things that happened. The fundamental reason why all this happened was because Greenspan cut interest rates so low. Let me explain it in this sense. So if interest rates are at 10% and you can get 11% by taking on more risk, you would weigh that issue. It's a, you know, it's a 10% increase. But if interest rates are at 2% and by taking on more risk then you can get 4%, you double your money. It's because interest rates were so low. Wall Street had an enormous appetite for risk and reward. Now, in the issues of that, you know, the whole thing was built upon the idea that a rising market would lift all boats. You know, this whole scheme worked as long as housing prices kept going up. But it wasn't just housing. I mean, we gave credit cards to people who could never afford to pay back. We then loaded more fees on them to make them more profitable in the short run at the end of the long term. But yes, it's absolutely clear we want more risk. The other thing that happened, by the way, and I was clueless about this, and my girlfriend's son, who's really big in finance, explained it to me. I assumed that, you know, when you had this pool of mortgages, it was divided equally. You know, 20% was junk, 20% was AAA, and, you know, the rest was in the middle. He told me no. 90% of it was AAA.
It was AAA. I thought you were going to tell me 90% was junk.
No. Well, they made it 90%
because
AAA.
AAA didn't mean anything.
They manipulated it for that.
And the credit agencies were rating things AAA that were really closer to junk. Right.
So, I mean, that's absurd, because 90% of the mortgages couldn't have been AAA. That, and all that happened. And, you know, it got so bad. There's this great story that's told. The reason Chuck Prince lost his job at Citigroup was that his traders had made some options bet on mortgages. I couldn't even begin to explain it. But neither he nor Bob Rubin, the former Treasury Secretary who was chairman, had any idea what they'd done. They'd never heard of that financial instrument before. When the CEO and the former Treasury Secretary don't even understand what their traders are doing, it is a prescription for disaster.
David in Long Branch, you worked in the mortgage business on September 15th, 2008?
Yes. Let me put you on. Let me take my speaker off.
Yeah, good. David getting on his handset for better sound quality.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was in the mortgage business then. I'm in the mortgage business now. Things are different now.
How?
Well, as I was telling the screener, first of all, I'm just pulling over here. First of all, there aren't as many people that are qualified.
You're supposed to pull over before you pick up a handheld device. Okay.
I did. Now I'm here. Okay. It's much more difficult for someone to get a loan. Are you there?
Yes, we're listening.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, people were in a mindset that $80,000 house they bought 20 years ago. 3-4 years ago was worth $800,000-$900,000. They want to sell that. They think they're going to get that for the house. Nowadays, they're only going to get $400,000, maybe. So they don't want to do anything until they sell that house. So their mindset has changed. And even though the rates are so low right now, you have to have a higher credit score. You got to have over 700, no more in the 600s or the 500s. You have to have a higher credit score. a lot of the lenders. I used to have 63 lenders.
So what
now
is
I
the,
have about 10.
Is the moral of the story that the market is taking care of risk without government regulation?
Yeah, I think government regulation is only hurting us. We tried legitimately, and everything we do is legitimate, loan modifications. But because there were scammers out there that were scaring people and taking their money, mm-hmm. we said, you know what, we're being lumped in with them. We're just not going to do it. So the government says they're going to provide loan modifications. I don't think they're working.
I don't think they're working either. And, in fact, we're going to do a segment next hour on exactly that. While the banks are starting to come back, things are not really looking up in I don't want to say the housing market like it's some investment vehicle. Things are not looking up for people who are facing foreclosures because that part of the bailout is not working so well.
You can talk about this next time, but maybe that's because many of those people shouldn't be in their homes. That's what no one addresses.
Because
they can't never afford
bad
it.
Mortgages
and they
in
can
the
never
place.
Afford it.
So here's another clip from a year ago today as we begin to wrap up. This is one of our other guests from that day, New York Times economics columnist Paul Krugman, after I asked him about the likely impact on New York.
I worry about New York City because much more than it was a few decades ago, New York City is a one-industry town. Not everybody works on Wall Street, but the money from Wall Street is what keeps the whole thing running. And so this is really bad for the city economy.
So I don't know what he would say differently from that sitting here today, but Greg David from Crane's New York Business, what do you think you'll be saying when you come back here and you're invited now on September 15th, 2010?
This is only the second thing I've ever agreed with Paul Krugman on. The other is rent regulation, which he thinks is terrible. The answer is that, of course, he's fundamentally right. In 1986, Wall Street accounted for 3% of the jobs in the city and 6% of the pay. For most of the 90s and the 2000s, in conversations like this, I'd talk about the 5 and 20 rule, 5% of employment, 20% of pay. In 2007, 28% of all the income in the city came from Wall Street. While it appeared that we built a diversified economy, Krugman's exactly right, we became ever more dependent on Wall Street. Wall Street is not going away, but the fundamental question that we have got to face is, will Wall Street just bounce back the old way? What will that mean for the New York economy? Can we diversify? And how do we reshape the city into a somewhat, we hope, different place but still wealthy? The questions are all out. They're involved in the mayoral election. They're involved in what Bloomberg's going to do in the next term. Yes, I think he'll be reelected, and we'll just have to see.
Greg David, editorial director for Crane's New York Business, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
And nice segue there at the end, because coming up in a minute, it's our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific primary day exit poll. Who are you voting for in the New York primaries for mayor, controller, public advocate, Manhattan DA, and anything else that's on the ballot in your neighborhood? Call us now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll talk to Daily News columnist Liz Benjamin, Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One Noticias, and New York Times Metro reporter David Chen, and take your calls in our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific primary day exit poll. You can start calling now.